You clock out. We clock in. Welcome to the Torn by Sports Lunch Break.
Welcome into the Torn by Sports Lunch Break. I am Alan Martindale, and joining us today is Terrell Williams. You know him if you're a Cougar fan. There's no doubt about that. He writes for CougarAccess.com as well as Enterprise Today. That's today with a 2.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at 4Hill2015. That's the number 4Hill2015. And also Enterprise Today on Twitter. So give him a follow. You are everywhere, man. Everywhere.
Thanks, man. Thanks for going on.
Happy holidays to you. There is just so much, you know. I was given the assignment to talk some BYU football. I went out of town. I got off the plane, and all of a sudden, everything blew up. All these news stories blew up. So there's no shortage of stuff for us to talk about. First things first, what I always do when I'm talking to people and the season's over, I want you to give us a grade. How would you grade the football season?
Wow. You know, minus the Michigan game, which we all know was kind of a fluke. Offensively didn't do anything, and the defense had to wake up in the second half. I would say I give the football season a B plus. I think it's a really good season, not quite a great season. You beat Utah in the bowl game. I think you're flirting with a great season, especially on with the difficulty of the schedule as an independent. But I would say a B plus is a fair grade at this point.
A lot of stuff going on. I mean, tons of stories. Now that I'm thinking about it, stories within stories throughout this season. A lot of adversity that BYU had to face. I want to start real quick with Tanner Mangum coming in and filling those giant shoes left by Taysom Hill. How much pressure did Tanner feel stepping in and having to fill the spot for Taysom freaking Hill, who's a legend already?
Oh man, you know. Tanner obviously competed in the Elite 11. That's been well documented with Jameis Winston and ended up co-MVP of the Elite 11. So he had that. We knew he had the talent. We knew that he had the ability to obviously be able to play under pressure. What we didn't know, or the majority of people didn't know, is how he would respond if he was thrust into action, especially on the road in a stadium with 90,000 people in Nebraska. And that first game, I mean, he just came out on fire. And he just looked like he had it. Not saying he threw for, you know, a crazy amount of yardage or anything. You could just see that he had the ability, kind of like Max Paul and John Beck and the BYU quarterbacks under Bronco have had the elite ones, the ability to basically tune out all the noise and just go to work. And you can't say enough about Tanner. I mean, his ability to be able to kind of utilize every wide receiver. I mean, we have 5-6 different wide receivers right now, over 500 yards. I mean, that's incredible if you think about it, and spreading the love. Some of those guys, before Tanner came with Taysom, though, they weren't getting those kind of numbers. And so really, you've got to think of Tanner in the case where Taysom obviously had the ability to run better than Tanner can. Tanner's decent, has the ability to run decently. But Taysom was an elite runner. Tanner is an elite pocket passing quarterback, and he's only a freshman. So, I mean, I would give him a grade on the season. I would say I'd give him an A, man. I mean, he's been phenomenal.
You know, you mentioned those receivers and all the talent that is that receiving core. How much of Tanner's early success would you put on his skills, which are obviously huge? But how much would you put on the talented receiving core that BYU has?
You know, I would put a lot. I mean, you look at a guy like Taron Helk. He plays more as a wide receiver. He's listed as a wide receiver, but he's really more of like a hybrid. He runs a lot of underneath routes, a lot of stuff that tight ends would run. And he's been huge this year for Tanner to be able to have a security blanket that a tight end normally is that BYU's been lacking. He's been huge. And then you've got to throw in Devon Blackman, obviously, coming from the JUCO route, previously at Oregon. He's been huge. Even though he hasn't had a touchdown yet, he's made some really big plays for BYU and is BYU's best one-on-one receiver to break man press. When these corners want to lock you down and they're going to bump you on the line, Devon Blackman's the guy that you want to be able to break that press because he's got the speed to do it. And I think he's worked on his strength and conditioning in the offseason, and that's gone to show on. And then obviously you have to give a shout out to Mitch Matthews. for really stepping up in some big games this year. I mean, he really plays well against Utah State, and he proved that in the last game. He's been excellent as well. All those guys have been great. And then Juergens early in the year, I mean, he had the huge touchdown catch to win the game against Boise. He was having multiple 100-yard games. He looked really good. Some of the people are like, you know, some of these guys dropped off, but the reality is they dropped off because there was so much love being spread around. Guys like Juergens, they had other guys step up, like Colby Pearson even, as the slot receiver. So really, the receivers all around, Tanner gets a ton of love for spreading the ball around. In the beginning, he was really targeting the slots, but in the end, he really came alive with the wings. Even a guy like Nick Kurtz, who has, I think he still has a lot more potential than we've seen this year, and we'll see that next year if he'll be a senior next year. But really, really happy with the core receiver group, and you got to give Guy Holliday a shout-out for that.
You know, it's nice to see a quarterback who can spread the ball like that, because it's just a whole different dynamic. It's a whole different weapon. We've seen quarterbacks in the past, specifically BYU, I mean, talking about Jake Heaps, where he would key in on one guy, and that was it. It couldn't check down his receiver. So it adds so much depth to your offense. But I'm just kind of wondering what could have been if Jamal Williams had played this season. What do you think, and I hate to do the speculation thing, but I'm going to make you do it. What do you think the season could have been if Jamal Williams had played?
I'll do it. I'll gladly do it. Jamal has the ability. I mean, he's not a ticket to the house every time he touches it kind of guy, but he's a consistent, I'll get you 4 or 5 yards a run. I'll run in between the tackles. I'll run around the edge. And I'm consistent where you don't have to shuffle in 3-4 back. I mean, you had some lesser talented guys running the ball this year in Nate Carter. Not to knock on Nate in any way, but just saying he wasn't a first string kind of guy, and he was thrust into that kind of a role. Jamal would have made all the difference. I really feel like the UCLA game, even though Adam Heaney had 124 yards, I think it was 124 yards. If he had Jamal back there with him, it would have been huge. And it would have been huge. Even in Michigan, it would have been really big, because he would have been able to slip in between those tackles. And he's really good running off tackle. He can really run anywhere, but he's great off tackle. He's great around the edge. And those were two things BYU really missed. Jamal has 4.5 40 speed, which is good speed. And none of the other guys were able to showcase that. Now, Riley Burt, I am really high on Riley Burt. I think he's going to be great. As a freshman, he was just still learning the offense, but he's got huge upside. As far as Jamal's concerned, though, I really think he could have provided one or two more wins for BYU if he was available, as hard as it is for me to admit that.
Well, you know, we have we've talked about the season that was, and now let's get into the two topics that everyone is dying to hear about. First of all, I want to ask you, what will BYU miss in the future with Bronco Mendenhall gone?
You know, there's been a lot of, you know, Bronco fans, and then there's been obviously a lot of people who are Bronco, I wouldn't say haters, but antagonists. And so really what you look at Bronco is you look at how Lavelle did it at BYU in his first 10, 11 years. You look at Bronco's record, and he's right up there with Lavelle. He gave you consistency. You went to a bowl game every year he was here. I mean, consistency in the terms of you didn't have a plateau season where you hit that BCS type season. You came close. You came really close. 2006 with John Beck, you came really close. You lose to Boston College in double overtime. I believe they lost to Arizona that year as well. So you finished 11-2, but you beat Utah, which is obviously very big for fans. And then in 2009 with Matt Paul, you run into a really hot TCU team later in the year, and you also lost to Florida State, but you open up the season at number 3 Oklahoma, and you go in there and you beat those guys. He had some big wins. He really did. There were some mental lapses on the team that people had a hard time with. I mean, 54-10 will be infamous for BYU fans and Utah fans from here forever. But I think overlooking those moments, you've got to really respect Bronco's ability to basically rep troops to win games. Last year, the defense was abysmal under Nick Howell's leadership as a defensive coordinator. And somehow the offense was able to average over, I think it was like 34.5 points a game with a backup quarterback. I mean, they really did a good job, and some of that's Anai as well. You got to give him credit. So in my estimation, from what I've seen, I think Bronco will be very respected down the road. I think people will look back and think he was a really good coach. Maybe there will be a sentiment that he wasn't a great coach, but he was a really good coach that provided consistency. And let's be honest, he pulled the program out of a really dark place once he took over for Croton.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the defense. You're making my segues easy. Why did that defense play so much better under Bronco?
This is my personal feeling on it, and people I've talked to who are in the program, players and on the defense, have told me similar things. I really think Nick Howell was kind of thrust into action before he was ready. He's a good position coach. People can argue that all they want. But really, BYU's passing defense, it's not terrible. It's good. It's not great. It's kind of in the middle. But as far as him taking over the defensive coordinator, I really feel like it was a too soon type of thing, and that he's better as a position coach, at least for now, than he is as a defensive coordinator. So that's Broncos. That's his mentality. I mean, he lives for defense. He feeds off of that. He loves these elite linebackers coming in. I mean, that's what he does. And so for Nick Howell to kind of take over, I think Bronco had a lot of trust in him, and he thought he would do well. Obviously, he wouldn't have put him in if he didn't think he would. But, you know, coming into last year, especially that Boise game, the first half, you just got to see that BYU was out of sorts on defense. And then obviously this year he's taken back over the reins, and we've seen that the guy really knows what to do when it comes to defense. Some would even call him an expert at defense or an amazing defensive coach, and there's certainly an argument for that.
No doubt. And now he's going off to Virginia. He is playing in the ACC. How much did conference affiliation play into his decision, do you think?
You know, to be honest, I mean, we're going to be honest about this. I think it played a very large role. I think people were aware that Bronco wanted to belong in the Big 12. He wanted to be in the Big 12 when he made the comment that he felt like BYU belonged in the Big 12, and that basically, you know, insinuating, hey, Big 12, let's get an offer here. We deserve it. And he was pretty insistent on that. Even with the media, he was very open about how he felt about that. That he felt independence was a temporary thing, and he felt like the Big 12 was the eventual destination that BYU needed to end up in. And so I think that it played a very large role. There may have been some other minor details in there as well, like a new challenge, something, you know, especially recruiting-wise. You go to Virginia, sure, you go to a basement-dwelling team in the ACC, but you're going to a conference that has Power 5 access. You don't have to worry about the honor code as far as recruiting, and he's bringing a bunch of his current assistants with him, according to Dick Harmon's article that he wrote today, and some players that I've spoken with, Robert Anai, and some of the assistants that he's taken with him, Atuaya, apparently Coach Beck as well, and Coach Tujay. And we'll see what other dominoes fall at this point. So I really feel like for him it's a new challenge, it's exciting, it's fresh, and I also think that the Power 5 name behind it really drove everything.
Now, obviously, those are huge shoes to fill. I mean, Bronco Mendenhall has been a staple at BYU for a decade, over a decade. So I'm going to ask you two questions here. First of all, there have been a lot of names mentioned to take over that spot. Who is your favorite? That's my first question. Who is your favorite candidate that you've heard who is interviewing for that position?
Well, my favorite candidate, who's not a very – I don't know how realistic this is, but according to – I think it was Drew Jay, after Bronco decided that he was going to leave, he said that this was the first guy that Tom Homo called, and that was Kyle Whittingham. I mean, obviously that's a very polarizing name to throw out there in the BYU coaching circle as a potential candidate. But, I mean, why not? If it's a BYU fan, why would you not want that? I don't know how Kyle feels or what he's looking at. I'm sure from what they said, he talked to Tom, and so maybe he's using that as leverage with Utah, or maybe he is legitimately interested. But Kyle Whittingham is a phenomenal head coach. He's clearly a defensive guy, just like Bronco. I think he's better with the media, to be honest. I don't think he is better with the media. He has a little bit more personable nature about him. I'm not saying that he's a completely extroverted person who's just charismatic, but he is very he's very open, he's very honest, and he's a realist. And Bronco's more of an introvert, and he's been more closed off to the media at times. And I think having a guy like Kyle would be super fresh. And so I'm all about that personally from that standpoint. But from a realistic standpoint, I realize that that may not be feasible money-wise as far as the relationship with BYU and Kyle. All of those reasons, Kalani Sitake would be my next guy up.
Tom Homo wouldn't be doing his job if he didn't make that call, and probably wouldn't be doing his job if he didn't make that call, his first or second call. I agree with you 100%. So, okay, so now you've mentioned who's your favorite, no matter how fantastic it is. Who is the odds-on favorite that you're hearing, you know, just being in the scene and talking to all these people in the media? Who is the odds-on favorite at this point?
Well, there's a million sources out there, right? I mean, you can talk to so many people. So unless I hear from a source that I absolutely know is connected to Tom Homo or Chad Lewis, the guys that are making the decisions at BYU that are basically the brass, I'm not going to assume anything, because I mean, you can get a source to any candidate at this point. I do know from talking to a BYU assistant coach, I won't say a name at this point, but I do know from speaking to him that he let me know at this point that BYU has always been interested in Kenny Niumatalolo, who I am very high on, by the way, as well. As Sitake, I mean, he's a head coach right now, so he wouldn't be transitioning from a coordinator. He would bring some guys with him, and Sean Nua, his defensive coordinator, and I think Ashley Ingram, the running backs coach. Both LDS guys. I think it'd be a smooth transition. The fan base, it feels like they need something. And I can relate to this as growing up a BYU fan my whole life. They need something to energize them, someone who's going to come in and fire up the alumni and get people, you know, connected again to BYU, not saying they haven't been, but really reach out and embrace that role. And I think that either Kenny Niumatalolo or Sitake could do it. At this personal juncture, I feel like Sitake is going to be the guy that gets the job, but I would not be surprised. And I have it on here's a little insider information. I know from what I've been told today by an assistant coach at BYU that they do want to talk to Kenny, and they are going to wait until after the Army-Navy game, because he does have a clause in his contract with Navy that he's not allowed to speak with anyone until after that game about potential coaching positions elsewhere. And so if that's the case, then I really think he's a viable candidate for BYU. I think he'd be a great candidate. And I would take either him or Sitake, but right now I'd give the edge to Sitake.
Sitake definitely makes the most sense in the fact that he's been around the program, whether, you know, he's obviously been at Utah and now at Oregon State, but he's been around the rivalry, he's been around locally here. People know him very well. So
players love him. Current players at BYU were recruited by him while he was at Utah. I mean, people love Sitake. He's a very lovable, honest kind of guy. And the majority of players that I've talked to at BYU have told me pretty much anyone in the program right now would love to have him as the head coach. And so that's another aspect of it as well.
I agree, definitely. Okay, and I'm going to ask you one more question, then we'll move on to the other topic that everyone's talking about. But first of all, you know, it's Bronco. He's going into his last game. How do you think he will be remembered by the BYU faithful in 10, 15, 20 years?
I was thinking about this today. It's a good question. I really think that down the road, people are going to really be grateful. They're going to look back, especially the people who grew up watching BYU, that were old enough to remember BYU under Lavelle and then transition, obviously, to Gary Croton, to Bronco. They're going to look back and they're really going to see that he took BYU from a place of a really, really bad place after Croton left, as far as how the alumni were feeling, how the fan base felt, the team itself was in shambles. He took him from that place to a team that consistently won 8 or 9 games a year and had a couple different 11-win seasons. They're going to look back and they're going to see that, yeah, he may not have been the most personable guy. He may not have been the most accessible to the media, and he may not have been the hottest name when Croton was fired, but he was the guy who brought BYU back. and they're going to respect that a lot. And I think right now you're in the midst of kind of the current and how he's done currently and what he's doing with recruiting, and that looms, you know, large in the moment. But like you're saying, 10, 15 years down the road, I really think people will think, wow, Bronco Mendenhall did great things for BYU.
And I got to apologize because there's just so much to talk about here that I might be keeping you a little bit longer than we expected.
You're all right.
But now let's move on to the bowl game.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is no regular bowl game. There is obviously BYU is facing Utah, arch rival Utah, in the Las Vegas Bowl. Keeping it with Bronco Mendenhall a little bit, what is his mindset going into his last game, first of all, and then add on the fact that it's against arch rival Utah?
My goodness. I mean, people have speculated on this. Should he be coaching the bowl game? Should he not? I mean, I personally have my own opinion on that, but as far as his mindset, just win. Just win. You've lost four in a row to Utah. You get your last shot to beat BYU's bitter rival, who's it's been well documented, Bronco isn't too high on Utah, and they're not too high on us. So, I mean, as far as that's concerned, he's thinking execution. He's thinking, what do we need to do to basically exploit their weaknesses and to utilize our strengths? And I think that's the mentality you need to have going into that game, is how are we going to manage the emotion? We're going to manage it through execution and logical logistics, basically thinking about X's and O's. And I think Derek Bronco's always been an X's and O's guy, and he'll go into the game that way.
He's always been pretty tight-lipped when it comes to the rivalry, too. I know some fans have wished he'd show a little bit more emotion around the rivalry game. Do you think, considering it's his last rivalry game ever, do you think he'll open up a little bit?
You know, I don't. I think that's just who he is. I mean, you saw him at Virginia, or not at Virginia. That's where he's going. You saw him in Nebraska when, you know, he was running around the field like a little kid, just screaming and hollering because he was so excited. And you saw emotion. You saw a guy who's bottled a lot over the years, and he hasn't really shown that it's true, especially with Utah. He's just kind of made it sound like it's just another game. And fans, that's hard for fans, because Kyle Whittingham's come out and he's been honest and he said, you know what, this is not just another game. This is a big, big game. It means a lot to these players. It means a lot to people in the state. And we're going to do the absolute best that we can to win. And so I think in the past, people have felt like Bronco maybe didn't put as much of an emphasis. In his mind, though, he feels like he did. In his mind, he feels like he did the work without talking about it. He did the X's and O's battle, and he made sure that the players execute as much as they could. But if you're a BYU fan, 4 years in a row, you've lost. And so I think the mentality for him is not thinking about, wow, this is my last game. It won't be an emotional farewell. I think he's just going to go out there, and he's going to try to win a ball game.
If you're a BYU fan, it's certainly setting up to be what could potentially be like a fairy tale type ending for Bronco Mendenhall, kind of overcoming, you know, this huge juggernaut that's plagued him for the last 4 years. Obviously, Bronco hasn't showed a whole lot of emotion, but fans and, more importantly, players certainly have. How is the team feeling about playing Utah?
The team is excited. I mean, people will say on Utah's side that they're not excited. We've talked I know some people have talked to certain players over there, and you've heard their media interviews. They're excited as well, but BYU's thrilled. I mean, they're real excited to be able to play Utah. There's not a nervous emotion. BYU has hired a sports psychologist that they've been working with here in the last couple of years to kind of get players' minds right. And I think that will play a factor. I really do. But I think they're thrilled. I mean, to give this guy one last win, to get 10 wins on this kind of a schedule, when very, very few prognosticators, if any, gave BYU a chance to have 10 wins, means the world. To send Bronco out on a win means the world. And you know what? To send the assistants out on a win, because they matter too. So these kids, they were recruited by the assistant. So the head coach, yeah, he's a big deal, but they're almost sometimes even more close to the assistant. So I feel like that's all going to play a role. And there's not a kid on that team who doesn't want to see the field, come December 19th.
Do you think players like Devon Blackman and Mitch Matthews are taking guys, maybe even like Tanner Mangum, under their wing and explaining, you know, this is a big deal. This is a rivalry game. We can't lose to Utah again. Do you think there's any of that? Do any of these players need a little push to realize how vitriolic this rivalry is?
You know, I think certain of have been educated. Devon never played in the rivalry himself, coming from the junior college route.
Yeah, that's right.
But I get what you're saying, and I do agree with it. And in talking from certain players, there has been an education that this game obviously matters for kids that are out of state. Kids from Idaho and like Tanner Mangum and even Colby Pearson, the slot receiver, they understand the importance of the game because they grew up liking watching BYU, and they understand that this rivalry means something on a national level. It's a big, big deal. And they don't want to lose again. They don't want to lose five in a row. Even if they've never played in the game, they don't want to be the team that lost Broncos' final game. And so having said all of that, I think there's an education going on saying, you know what, these guys, there is a bad, I won't say bad blood necessarily, like that's a good thing, but there's not a lot of love lost in this rivalry, and that's definitely being educated to the younger, especially the freshmen and sophomore players who haven't seen the field against Utah.
That is a very, very political way to say it. That is for sure. Couple more questions, and then I'll let you go. Is there too much distraction going into this game? If I was a BYU fan, that might be a concern for me. Do you think there's too much of that? Too much with the Bronco and the Utah, and Utah fans aren't happy. Is there too much of that going on?
Yes. Yeah, there is a ton of distraction, and I think it's going to build. And I think the players are definitely aware of that. The players I've talked to, there's so much going on in their heads. But when you hit the field and you're there in the Las Vegas Bowl and you got 30,000 plus people, however many people Sam Boyd Stadium fits, cheering you on, and it's a sea. I mean, there's going to be more BYU fans there than Utah. We know that because the seats went on sale. The tickets went on sale before Utah could buy them. And that they can thank the Pac-12 for that, for not wanting more tickets than I think it was 7,500. So at this point, the players are going to be thinking about a lot of things. They hit the field that day, and the only thing that's going to be in their mind is win. But I definitely think right now that it's a distraction. And you can hear it argued from multiple viewpoints. Bronco should be able to coach. Bronco shouldn't. And I should be the interim coach. There's a lot of different people who are saying different things. I personally feel like maybe he shouldn't, because of the assistants and maybe having, you know, maybe ulterior motives, trying to take kids with them to Virginia has been reported as well. But if you're a player and you know you have a chance at a 10-win season on a difficult schedule as an independent, going into next year, you need to have some momentum, because next year's schedule is the hardest schedule in BYU football. I really think that they're going to hit the field and all that stuff goes away. But preparation-wise, can they push through it? And that's the question. Are they really going to have their mindset 100% in preparation? And if they don't, it won't be a good outcome for BYU.
Yeah, come game day, none of that matters anymore. Just the opponent wearing the red jerseys. All right, last question. People, when I interview people, they either love it or hate it. But I'm going to ask you to give us a prediction for the bowl game.
Score-wise prediction?
No, not score-wise. Just who do you think is going to come out the victor?
Oh, man. Well, there's a few different advantages I think Utah has over BYU, and I think there's a few advantages BYU has over Utah. I think offensively in the passing game, everyone knows that BYU has the advantage. Utah's obviously out Booker in the running game, but they have Joe Williams coming in at the running back position, who's really good. So, I mean, both sides have some disadvantages and advantages. I've got BYU winning the game. I think there's just too much riding on it. I think BYU wins at 27-21 when it's all said and done. I gave you a score prediction anyway.
Very nice. You think it's going to be another last-second nail-biter?
I do. I really do. I think it'll come down to either BYU or Utah having the ball, and BYU will just make one more play than they do.
Yeah, if BYU's got the ball down the stretch with Tanner Mangum, I like their chances a lot. That's for sure.
Especially when he runs to the right.
Definitely. Tara Williams, seriously, you were so generous with your time. We went way longer than we expected. I can't thank you enough. A lot of good insight.
Check
out CougarAccess.com. I'm sure all BYU fans are very familiar, and I'm sure they all follow you on Twitter. But just in case you don't, he is at 4 Hill 2015. That's the number Four Hill 2015. Also, check him out, enterprisetoday.com. That's today with a two, the number two, and at Enterprise Today. Seriously, Terrell, thank you so much.
Oh, man, it has been my pleasure. Awesome. Awesome talking to you, man.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You can check out all the interviews we do. We do it multiple times a week over at TornBySports.com. We cover the Cougars, Utes, Aggies, and the Jazz. It's basketball season, so we got a lot of interviews coming your way. Terrell, hopefully we'll check you out down the road and talk a little basketball, too.
Looking forward to it, man. Really looking forward to it.
For the boss man, Grant Bagby, I am Alan Martindale. Thank you so much for listening to the Torn by Sports Lunch Break. We'll see you next time.
Go Cougs.
This has been a Torn by Sports production.